Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'm the Bill Arnold part of that sentence. Awfully glad you joined me today. You know, children always seem to ask why. They ask that why question all the time. But when you get older and you ask that why question, it usually is connected to some suffering of some kind. Why is this happening? And, you know, the world kind of has this cause and effect thing going. And there are some effects we just can't really pinpoint what the cause is. And some causes don't make sense. And that leads us to feel a little bit low or depressed or whatever. And we still live in an age of pretty much instant everything. We just kind of have lost the ability to wait. And somehow we're supposed to learn patience through all this, but we're always in a hurry and it seems to be always in conflict. So I've been thinking about so many people that are in a place of discomfort today. Maybe they've been dislodged from something. Maybe they're awaiting the results of something that is very scary to them. And I just have been, my heart's been heavy with prayer for several people I know that are kind of in that hallway, so to speak, where maybe one door is closing and another one hasn't opened yet. So you're kind of in that dark hallway. I think that God is most interested in what your thoughts are when you're there. Anyway, today is We the People Day. As you know, it's Election Day. So if you've voted, way to go. And if you haven't, yeah, I think you got till 8 o'clock. So we'll take a little break. And then Bob Lapine's my guest. He's a Senior Vice President and Chief Creative Officer of Family Life and co-host of Family Life Today. Very excited to talk to Bob. Be back in a minute.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome back to the show. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I think our guest likes that song. I'm not sure. Bob Lapine is Vice President and Chief Creative Officer of Family Life and co-host of Family Life Today. And he and his wife, Marianne, live in Little Rock, Arkansas. And he serves as an elder and teaching pastor at Redeemer Community Church. Hey, Bob.
Did you know that yesterday was Herman's birthday?
Was it really?
It was Peter Noon's birthday yesterday. That's right.
So
there we go. We're singing Mrs. Brown. That is one of my favorites from 1965 when I was 9 years old and I was staying up later than I was supposed to be staying up.
How did you get away with that, having that little transistor on your pillow? Were you just keeping the volume real low?
Well, yeah. I mean, transistors were small, so they fit under the pillow real easily. And I just had it there, and my parents weren't standing outside the door, so yeah, I could just keep it down and sing along. This is part of how I fell in love with radio, was growing up with pop radio in the 60s. And I've told people before that the first time I started listening to pop radio, every morning it sounded like they were having a party. And I thought, that's what I want to do for a living. I want to go have a party every day and listen to music. And here I am almost, I don't know, 5 decades later having a party every day and listening to practical biblical help and hope for your marriage and your family instead of Herman's Hermit.
Right. And I wanted to book you on my show so I could get a free radio seminar.
Well, show. What do you want to talk about? We'll start it out and we'll go through the history of rock and roll radio. How's that sound?
Well, it sounds pretty good. You know, when you talk about radio and your love for it early on, it really is a very intimate thing, isn't it? I mean, because you're really most of the time one-on-one with somebody.
It's one of the things that I love most about radio. We've got a kitchen table in our studio here at Family Life. Really, it's a dining room table that we brought in because we wanted to remind ourselves and to remind the guests who are coming to be on our program that we're sitting around the dining room table having a conversation, and the listener is in the open chair at the end of the table, and they're listening. They may not have a button where they can punch in and add their thoughts, but I'm sure that your listeners and our listeners do just that. They just are talking in the car and adding their own thoughts to whatever the conversation is about. But it really is that intimate. It's us having a conversation together, and the listener feels like they're right there with us. And I meet people, you do this, you meet people all the time who say, I feel like I know you. I feel like I know your family. You've been a part of our lives. You've helped disciple us. And that's one of the great joys of radio.
You know, and Bob, I sometimes underestimate how important it is for radio just to be company for people some days. Sometimes people just need company.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've asked myself the question for years, what do people want when they touch that button in the car or turn on the radio at home? What are they asking that little box or the radio on their dashboard? What are they asking that to do? And I've concluded they're saying, entertain me or inform me.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's just keep me company. I think about the times I've been driving late at night and it's a cold night and I'm out on an interstate highway somewhere traveling, you know, with the family asleep in the car. And I just want some company, and I'll turn on the radio and scan the dial to find a conversation that's going on where I can be part of the conversation and I can have some company with me in the car that's talking to me. So I do think that's part of the intimacy of radio. People are tuning in and saying, keep me informed, keep me company, and if you know, if there's some good music or if you can keep me entertained in the process, that's always a plus too.
Mm-hmm. Would you give me a little background on your faith journey?
I grew up going to a mainline denominational church where our family was semi-regular. I mean, in the early years, we were pretty regular. My dad was an elder in our local church, and we went, I think, most Sundays. I remember hearing about the Bible and about Jesus in our early elementary years, in my early elementary years. And then at the end of our elementary years, our family kind of quit going to that church. I continued going to church because I liked the choir, but I jumped around. I went to one church that had a good junior high choir, and then I went to another church because they had a good senior high choir. So I was kind of more interested in the choirs than I was in the gospel. I don't remember hearing the gospel in those churches I was going to, but I did start, when I was in high school, I started going to Young Life meetings. A fellow student invited me over to her house on a weeknight for a Young Life meeting. And first of all, it was a weeknight, so a chance to get out of the house on a weeknight, a school night, was a good thing. And the girl who invited, she was cute, and so yeah. Go to her house on a weeknight, that was a good thing.
Uh-huh.
But that's where I first remember hearing the gospel, and I remember thinking, this is attractive to me. This is something I'm interested in. I started playing guitar for Young Life, and before long, I was just kind of folded in. I was a part of the group. But I have to tell you, Bill, I think there was about a four-year period where if you had asked me, are you a Christian, I would have said yes. But I had a guy who took me aside during the end of my junior year in college, and we had been at a Bible study together, and I had, I don't know what I had said, but at the end of the Bible study meeting, he had come to me and said, I'd like to get together with you. I have some questions I'd like to ask you. And in my arrogance, I thought, I wonder what he needs for me to explain to him from the Bible. And when we got together, he said, I don't think you get it. And that was pretty bold of him, but honestly, he was dead right.
Mm-hmm.
He took me to the Bible, took me to Romans chapter 3, and he showed me the passage that talks about the reality of our sin, that says there's none righteous, no, not one, nobody seeks after God, and then it describes the reality of our sin, and he said, this is talking about you and about me. And Bill, I had always heard that Jesus had died for my sins, and here was my impression. My impression was, I'm a mostly good person who has done some bad things, and I guess to make the ledgers work, Jesus has to die for those few bad things I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that's fine. What I'd never heard anybody say is that my heart is deceptive and wicked and evil, and that I'm a rebel against God, and that I really want life to be all about me and not about God. But when this guy showed me that in the Bible, I thought, that's really true. That's what's true about me. So I look back on that conversation and that day as my spiritual turning point, where I went from having a superficial understanding of Jesus and the gospel to being hit right between the eyes with the reality of my sin and my need for a Savior. And that's where I believe I trusted Christ.
Bob, how old were you when that happened?
I was 20 or 21 years old.
Yeah, because sometimes in mainline churches you can grow up sort of voting yes for God, because why not? But you don't really have a relationship with him.
It's what good people do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought of myself as a good person. I mean, I was on the student council at church, so I was one of those good kids at school, and good kids are on student council and they go to church, and this is a part of your civic life. And I remember being spiritually interested in things, but it was all intellectual. It was not really personal for me until this guy sat me down and said, I don't think you get it. And that was the change point for me.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Bob Lapine, he is co-host of Family Life Today and also the Senior Vice President and Chief Creative Officer of Family Life. We'll take a little break and be back with more of Bob Lapine. The Big Hand is on the 17. Awfully glad you joined me today. If you listen to Family Life Today on this radio station, you are familiar with the voice that is on our studio line, Bob Lapine. He hosts, co-hosts with Dennis Rainey, Family Life Today, and they seek to effectively help families and marriages become one and try to improve. So, Bob, what marital issues are causing the greatest pain in relationships today?
Well, I think we could look at the symptomatic kinds of things. So there are all kinds of superficial, and I don't mean that they're insignificant. I mean that they are symptomatic. Things like money issues or disagreements about intimacy issues in marriage or conflict about children. I mean, if you ask the average marriage counselor, why are people showing up in your office, they'll say communication, unresolved conflict. There are issues of infidelity that are showing up. There are issues of money, lack of trust, sometimes domestic violence. We can go through all of this. At the heart of all of this is a fundamental misunderstanding that I think all of us have about God's design for marriage. See, I went into marriage thinking the purpose of marriage is to somehow satisfy an emptiness in me, or to add benefit or something to my life. I'm getting married for me, for my benefit, and my wife's job is to make sure that my benefit is provided for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I made a shift. I remember this. I remember shifting in my thinking. I'm reading Ephesians 5, and it says Christ died for the church, and husbands should die for their wives. And so I shifted in my thinking from thinking, okay, it's not supposed to be about how I benefit her, about how she can benefit me, but how can I live for her? And Bill, after a long period of time, I realized that's not even right. It's not about whether I'm pleasing her or whether she's pleasing me. It's really a question of, are we both together pleasing God? And when we start with that as the premise and say, here's the sine qua non, here's the foundational issue for every marriage. Are we together in our lives and in our relationships living in such a way that God is honored and glorified and pleased with how we're living? Because that's why he brought us together. Psalm 34:3 says, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. Is God being magnified and exalted through our marriage together? That's what it's supposed to be all about. So the issues of conflict over intimacy or kids or money or all of that, these are all things that happen when, instead of being focused on magnifying God, we're focused on pleasing ourselves or pleasing one another in a marriage relationship. That's how we get off course. And the only way to get back on course is for us to say, we've been aiming at the wrong North Star. We've been thinking that me pleasing you and you pleasing me is what marriage is all about. It's about us pleasing God. So how do we do that now?
Mm-hmm. Bob, talk about selfishness and how that fits into marital conflict.
Well, it's the underlying core of just about anything you're dealing with. So if you stop and ask the question, how did infidelity happen in a marriage relationship? Well, it happened because somebody said, I have a selfish desire that I'm going to fulfill. You ask, why can't couples see eye to eye when it comes to an issue related to their kids? Well, it's because I feel passionately one way and my spouse feels passionately another way, and we're both committed to the fact that we are right. Rather than saying, okay, how can we come together and say, what does God have to say about this? And how can we learn to trust him and follow his way, rather than being dug in and saying it's all about me? So I think selfishness, in fact, I've said to couples for decades, this is something I learned back in the early years of our marriage. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3, is a verse that if you would apply this in most marriages, you'd solve 95% of the issues couples are dealing with. The verse says, do nothing from selfishness. And in the original language, the word nothing there means nothing. So do nothing from selfishness.
Yeah.
But with humility, regard one another as more important than yourself. When we would do that and say, okay, first of all, I'm going to do nothing from selfishness. I'm going to regard you as more important than me, and I'm going to regard God as the most important in all of this. That'll cure 95% of the marriage issues couples are facing today.
Mm-hmm. Bob, are there seasons in marriages that seem to surface that are more difficult than others, like an empty nester when a couple all of a sudden realizes that they've taken the last kid off to school, and now what?
Yeah, the two places, the two times in a marriage, two seasons, when the divorce rate is highest is in the first 5 years and in what you just identified as the beginning of the empty nest season. And in the first 5 years, it's couples being confronted with difficult adjustments that they didn't realize they were going to have to make, where all of a sudden we realize, oh, you think this way. Oh, you live this way. Oh, I didn't realize that this is how you feel and believe and act. And instead of adjusting to that, we get offended by that, or we don't compromise with one another on these issues that are not biblical issues, but compromising on preference issues. That's where divorce enters in, where isolation starts to happen. But the other place is, as you mentioned, it's right there when the kids head off on their own. And mom and dad have been focused on kind of doing life together with the kids at the hub. And now all of a sudden they've lost the center of the orbit. They've been orbiting around the kids. And when the kids are gone, it's like the sun being gone from the solar system and the planets start to spin out of alignment. That's why you can't have the kids as the center of your home, mm-hmm. and the center of your marriage, because when the kids are gone, the planets will spin out of alignment because there's no gravitational pull there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Bob, is tech hurting or helping marriages? Technology.
technology is, I think it's doing both. And technology is a tool. You know this.
Oh, of course.
It's not the technology. It's technology is not the evil. It's what we do with technology. Here's how it's helping marriage. It's helping marriage because last week when I had to be in Chicago for a day and Marianne was back home, we were able to hop on FaceTime and have an extended conversation in the evening, not just talking, but looking at each other and being able to be eye to eye and face to face. Well, I couldn't do that 20 years ago. That's mm-hmm. a great blessing for me and for my marriage. But where it's hurting is where the relationship starts to lose some of the face-to-face, some of the one-on-one, where you get distracted from one another by the technology that is pulling you away. So when we were out on our anniversary date and I pulled out my phone to check a text or an email, and Marianne, I looked up, and she's kind of glaring at me like, really? On our anniversary? This is what your attention's going to be drawn toward is an email? And I had to recognize, yeah, I shouldn't be focusing on that. We're so easily distracted by technology that we lose some of the one-on-one that needs to happen to make a marriage work.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any challenge in this generation that previous generations didn't think so much about?
Well, I think we have we have issues that emerge in a generation. They kind of ebb and flow from one generation to another. So I'm thinking about the easy access to pornography that exists in our culture today.
Yes.
And the great impact that that's having on marriages. I think about the very issue of how marriage is defined and how marriage is understood in the culture and whether it is a sacred institution or whether it's a contract that you slap together for as long as we both shall love. There was an earlier day where marriage had a sacred place, even among people who weren't churchgoers. Today, we've lost some of the solemnity and the sacredness of marriage. But it's really not marriage that we've lost the solemnity and the sacredness for. It's the Bible itself, and it's God himself. As we drift away from that, we start doing what the people in the book of Judges did. We start doing what seems right in our own eyes. And that's where the fractures in the marriage relationship start to come from.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bob, I've got kind of one last question. It's kind of a $64 million question. Did you live for a while or grow up in Edina, Minnesota?
That's the wind-up, and he throws the pitch. I was born in Edina.
Okay.
So people have told me that means I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Is that right?
Well, I'm from Edina as well because somebody said, did you know Bob Lapine's from Edina? And I thought, I did not know that, but I want him on the show now. Couple of cake eaters.
I guess. I was born in Edina, and we lived there for a year and a half. And so we moved to St. Louis in the late 50s. So I didn't know much about Edina.
Okay.
Except my parents told me it was really cold there, and we were glad to be south in St. Louis. But, I guess having an Edina heritage is a pretty big deal, right?
It is kind of a big deal, yeah. So I grew up there, and I thought, how funny that you were also an Edina boy. I didn't know how long you lived there, but now I know. So really, really nice to talk to you, Bob. And just thank you so much for your wisdom and your daily work on Family Life Today. It's really nice to talk to you.
Bill, always good to talk to you, and grateful for everything that's going on at Faith Radio and for your daily show. You do a great job.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Bob. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Bob Lapine's been my guest from Family Life Today. We'll take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Productions. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're with me today. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Kim Cotola, as you might remember her being a weekly guest on my show, and now I get her every so often, which does not make me as happy as I once was, but I'm still happy whenever I can get her. She's an award-winning broadcaster, and she's got an amazing faith and life story. She's invested so much of her life on the spiritual impact of abortion on the women and men who choose it, as well as the hope available to make a better choice. Kim is an Amazon number one bestseller, a finalist for the Evangelical Christian Press Association's Book of the Year in 2013. And it has a foreword by Ruth Graham. And I'm on kind of a Graham roll today. I had Will Graham on, and now I've got Kim Cotola on. Kim, good afternoon.
Hi, Bill.
I had Will Graham on earlier.
I'm going to have to live up to all of that
in this next
half hour.
I know, but I figured you're worthy of all of this, so I want you to get all your credentials in order.
Thank you.
Yeah, because it's We the People Day, and so here we are. People are out voting, and they are going to make decisions. And I'm curious to find out what Planned Parenthood's game plan is for the next year coming up in 2019.
Oh, my goodness. So the reason why we should talk about this, Bill, is because, as someone said, and I would give credit if I knew who it was, because I think this is really the point, the issue. A lot of our efforts as people who stand for the cause of life have been on, you know, attacking the supply, limiting abortion access, passing laws so that it's harder, parental consent laws, doctor admitting privileges, and so on. And these are all great things. And I thank God that there are individuals using their expertise and wisdom and knowledge to do those things. But what we need to do is we need to dry up the demand.
Yes.
Right? And so it's both and, of course. Supply and demand both need to be diminished. In a world where the church is the church, fully, living out the mandate that we have from Jesus Christ, abortion would be unnecessary. And, of course, in our heart of hearts, it would be unthinkable, because we would know that these are innocent lives that deserve protection. And we would all come around anyone who was tempted to do anything else other than protect that life. And we would help her, and we would help the couple to do something different. So then you have Planned Parenthood. And, of course, they got, you know, really up in arms after the Kavanaugh hearings and saw that things weren't necessarily going to go their way, despite all of their tactics and spending. And so they put out a press release saying that Planned Parenthood is uniquely positioned to do the work of expanding abortion access in key states. And so what this means is that, you know, they're changing the playbook to keep up with what's happening, to keep, you know, to do workarounds and to find new methods and to, for example, expand telemedicine. So you don't have to have an abortion facility or an abortion business or a standalone clinic in any different location, because there are fewer and fewer of them. You can, in your Planned Parenthood office or anywhere, set up a telemedicine site and dispense pills to women. Now there's even, I mean, they're cooperating with groups through the National Abortion Funds that are from Europe, working to sell women abortion pills by U.S. mail. And the FDA is investigating that. But so if we think that, okay, we're going to get this outlawed at the U.S. Supreme Court and now abortion is going to go away, you know, that we'll still have our work cut out for us. We'll still have to stand in the gap for couples who need help, and we'll still have to speak out against their, you know, tactics and their talking points. And Bill, you know, part of their plan, it's a 3-point plan, right? So they've got to expand access. They've got to keep the legislators in their pocket that they're buying with their millions and millions and millions spent on campaigns. And then they've also got to win the culture. So they're using Hollywood and media to destigmatize abortion. And this is something they've been doing, but they plan to expand it. And so, you know, what they'll do is, you know, tap the celebrities, tap the writers, tap the producers, you know, the Shonda Rhimes out there, along with the people that have the high profile on the shows, the Kerry Washingtons. And I think Shonda Rhimes might be on their national board. But when she wrote that storyline for Scandal a couple of years ago, that was so offensive to those of us who are Christians, you know, Kerry Washington playing Olivia Pope having an abortion to, I think it was Silent Night, or, you know, a Christmas hymn, not a Christmas carol, a Christmas hymn.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's so depraved, and they'll go to any length to destigmatize and to normalize it. And we really need to understand, you know, that this is their game plan. They're not backing down.
Kim, the Christian voting bloc really matters when it comes to supporting the pro-life movement. Say more about that.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Bill, it's election day, and we have to vote for those candidates that we believe best represent, you know, what the Lord would have us do with our responsibility to be good citizens. You know, the word says that God ordains governments. He raises leaders and he tears them down. And so, yeah, I mean, as a 501c3, we don't endorse candidates or do any lobbying or any of those things. But I mean, what I hope to do is help people to see that, you know, the Democrat Party in their platform has supported a woman's reproductive right to choose abortion as something that's non-negotiable. They refuse to see the humanity of children before they are born, and they continue to strike them down to the tune of, you know, close to a million every year. And so, you know, we have to ask ourselves if there's any situation in which we can imagine our Lord saying the solution to your problem would be to get rid of it, to kill this baby, to have an abortion. I can't think of a circumstance where he would say so, despite, you know, clergy that are actively blessing abortion businesses. I think Franklin Graham was on Twitter saying that's like, you know, someone in the clergy going to bless the gas chambers at Auschwitz. Hmm. It's absurd. It's evil. And so, yes, for us as Christians, you know, these issues matter. And I know, you know, there are people much wiser than I am that talk about the problems with being a one-issue voter. But if you believe, as I do, that abortion is the preeminent moral crisis of our time, it needs to be a priority when we vote.
Mm-hmm. Kim, now, Planned Parenthood, they always want to brag about all the great health services they offer. And I don't really know all the health services they offer, so pardon my ignorance here. But I do know that they're obsessed with abortion. So with the declining number of clinics, what is Planned Parenthood? Are they going to continue to push that more than ever?
Well, yeah, I think so, Bill, because, you know, it's, you're right, they are obsessed with it, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that. Many of the principals, like their former president, Cecile Richards, and the president of NARAL, Elise Hoag, have publicly spoken out about how beneficial abortion was in building their families, ironically. You know, there's a spiritual aspect to this, and I can't speak to either of those women personally because I don't know them, but I can tell you that when someone who has had an abortion refuses to see that there has been a member of their family that has been destroyed and instead would put forth the narrative that they built their family through destroying that family member, you have to see that there's a strong spiritual delusion, you know, and that as the word says, you know, the prince of this world has blinded them to the truth of what they're actually saying. And I love, you know, John Enzer, I think we've talked about him before. He's one of my mentors. He wrote the book for pastors, Answering the Call. Pastors, if you don't know how to preach on this, please read this book. If you don't know how to counsel individuals in your churches, please read Answering the Call. But he worked in the pregnancy help movement and talked about a family coming in, and the husband and wife had also a helper, I think, as the story went, who was with their two sons out in the waiting room. And so the couple were in talking with John about, you know, what was driving their perceived need to terminate a pregnancy. And, you know, the woman said, we owe it to our sons. We can't afford to give them any kind of a decent life if we have another mouth to feed. And John said, well, I see. So let's bring them in here and ask them, would they want a big screen TV? Would they want a new car? Would they want a college education? They weren't, in other words, they were employed. They had a basic middle class standard of living. And they were talking about, you know, being able to, I don't know, give that quality of life that they perceived money was necessary for to their boys. And when they put it in those terms, ask these boys, would they prefer to lose a sibling to have those things? Of course, the parents said, oh, we can't go through with this. And I think it's a really telling story because it goes to the heart of who our children are, you know, and how they would regard losing a sibling if they were brought into the decision making. And I don't think there's a child out there that in their innocence would say, oh, I see, sure, we should not have that baby. You know, it just... The mindset is obsessed, as you say, Bill, and I think that we also, you know, it just tells me we really need to wage the spiritual battle in the places where we do our prayer, and know that this is the most important thing that we can do to stand against abortion and mm-hmm. abortion rights.
Now, Kim, I'm not calling California crazy, but I'm close to it, just because they do a lot of crazy things. But what is the current position of the judges that are suggesting to pro-life crisis pregnancy centers that they have to give information out about abortion?
Well, in California, they passed this law, the FACT Act, the Reproductive FACT Act, they called it, which said that, you know, crisis pregnancy centers had to, or pro-life pregnancy resource centers, some have different, you know, names, it's the pregnancy help community, that they had to inform California women that abortion is legal and California will pay for it. And they had to do it in writing, and they had to have this posted in 13 languages, I think, Bill. It was absurd abridgment of free speech. And the U.S. Supreme Court agreed and said that California cannot enforce that law. I think the pregnancy centers were subject to a $1,500 fine with every infraction, right? And it was designed to put them out of business. And so Alliance Defending Freedom put together a lawsuit, NIFLA versus Becerra, I think it was. Anyway, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the pregnancy centers this year. And there's about 200 pro-life pregnancy centers in California, many of which have a religious orientation. And, of course, forcing them to promote abortion to people is completely against every principle of free speech that our country stands for. And yet, Bill, you can read today, if you just Google it, you know, that this fake clinic movement started, you know, by NARAL and others from the National Abortion Funds and all of those who are in league with the abortion lobby. You know, they are putting out their propaganda, which says that these are places that are evil and dangerous and misleading women, and that they need to be stopped. And so they're still trying to mount legislation in different states, even though every time a state has enacted a law like this, the courts have said, you know what, there is such a thing as free speech. And you know what, religious organizations and ministries can offer help to people who come in and voluntarily ask for it, and do that in the way that they see fit, as long as they're not, of course, harming anyone. And the thing is, you know, if you ask the pregnancy centers how women actually feel, because those in the fake clinic movement will always find, you know, someone who will give her testimony about having been deceived and how upsetting it was to have someone witness the gospel to them or some other complaint that they will have. But pregnancy centers that do evaluations have found high, high approval ratings from their clients in the 90% plus range. And this is the proof of the pudding, that pregnancy resource centers are actually offering the only choice. Certainly an abortion provider is not offering choice to women who they sell their abortion services to. But, and so I think it's a wonderful thing that in California, there was a court order last Friday following the Supreme Court decision way back in June that found that the FACT Act likely violates the First Amendment and California may not enforce it.
Mm. Wow. All right. Kim Cattrall is my guest. We'll take a little break and we come back more with Kim. It's 46 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Kim Cattrall is with me. Cradle My Heart Productions. And Kim, I'm looking at some of the statistics. In 2014, 19% of U.S. pregnancies ended in abortion. And I do find it painful to read any statistic because there's one abortion is too many. But there is, thanks to even millennials, are fewer abortions happening. And they're kind of behind some of that movement, aren't they?
Well, they are. And the reason is because so many of their peers are missing and they understand this. You know, and they're, America, some have said, is a post-abortive nation. That's a term that's used in the pregnancy help community and elsewhere, post-abortive, to describe someone who has had an abortion. And although, of course, not everyone in America has had an abortion, to say that we're a post-abortive nation means that few of us have directly escaped the impact. We all either know someone who has had an abortion, or we're in relationship with them, even if we don't know that they had that abortion, you know, or we have been involved as a helper or a support person. I mean, it's so widespread now that grandparents are affected, siblings are affected. And yes, the millennials realize that, you know, there, as I said, there are many in their generation that are missing. And I'm really encouraged by groups like Students for Life of America, Feminists for Life on college campuses, that are not only, you know, trying to do education and raise awareness, but they've really got, you know, efforts on the ground with outreach like Pregnant on Campus. There are very few campuses that make accommodation for pregnant students, whether they're married or not. And it's ridiculous today to think that a woman couldn't complete her education simply because she's pregnant. I mean, I give you Serena Williams. I give you Beyonce. These women are throwing out some incredible physical energy while pregnant and showing the rest of the world that, you know, first of all, it doesn't have to be the end of your future as a woman who works outside the home, for example. But it also is something that, you know, it takes up 9 months of your life. And it doesn't, you know, young women, Bill, and I think this was one of the big drivers of the decision to choose abortion when I did. Young women who are in an unexpected, unintended pregnancy feel as if their life is coming to an end, because their identity is threatened. They haven't perceived themselves or conceived themselves as mothers, no pun intended there. And so they think that if I have to have a child, I can't do fill in the blank. I can't complete my education. I can't pursue this career path I'm on. I can't, you know, those are the biggies. I can't be the person that that everyone in my community thinks that I am, even if they're not, you know, looking at career education. They just maybe don't want to get married, don't want to be a single parent, and so on. And so, you know, abortion promises this easy out, that you can just, okay, you know, terminate that pregnancy and proceed with your plans. And that's what I thought I was doing. And I also bought the deception that said, you know, it's not a baby, it's just cells. And they're still telling women this. You know, it would be very interesting to me, now that Planned Parenthood has a doctor, an MD, former ER physician, Dr. Leanna Wen, and also former commissioner of health for the city of Baltimore, you know, if they're going to continue with the obfuscation and deception that they are so well known for in the medical facts about fetal development and pregnancy. That is going to be very interesting. And it's also interesting to note that, you know, her claim to fame was a TED Talk and a book that she wrote on transparency in medicine. And ever since getting her job at Planned Parenthood, all of those things have been scrubbed.
Wow.
You can't really find her as an advocate
That's
for interesting, transparency
Kim.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
I think you can still watch her TED Talk, but all the links are no longer operational to, you know, her transparency efforts. And so, you know, this is the thing that, I mean, if we want to encourage young women, and if we want to stand for life and help them to make a better choice than abortion, you know, what we have to do is change our culture. We have to make motherhood, you know, a dignified choice in life, mm-hmm. and a viable choice. And we have to, you know, build communities where raising children is affordable and is a thing that you know, young women can think about seriously as the most important work that they could do. And so it's all of a piece. But yeah, there we have our work cut out for us, Bill. And again, I mean, I think that, you know, the millennials are holding a huge key, because, I mean, they've got next, and they're definitely pro-life.
Mm-hmm. As I'm thinking about millennials, and I'm thinking about they have lost a sibling, is it because they discovered from their parents that mom had an abortion, so they're missing a sibling, so it's affecting them as an adult?
In some cases, yes. There are still many parents who haven't been able to discuss a prior abortion or a past abortion with their children. But, you know, there are researchers and clinicians like Dr. Philip Ney and Dr. Teresa Burke and others who have said that, you know, the impact is profound when there has been an abortion in a parent's past, the impact on siblings, whether or not that is disclosed to the sibling, the impact is profound. And it starts with things as simple as being perhaps overprotective of the child. I harmed a child to the point of death in the past, if you will, and now I can't really trust myself to be a good parent to this child, so helicopter parenting is on the menu. Or you may see things like a failure to bond. I'm going to keep my distance because I'm not sure that I can be a loving parent to this child, so I'm not even going to bond with them.
Wow.
The dynamics go deep. And so whether or not a child is actually aware of it, and when the children do become aware of it, and I don't recommend that parents just sit down and, you know, disclose this to a child. You have to take care of yourself first and be sure that your grief has had a healthy outlet. Be sure that your guilt is resolved through faith in Jesus Christ, in my case, or through deep counseling if you're opposed to Christianity altogether. But you would want to deal with yourself before you would ever disclose that to a child. And you would want to be sure that help is in place for that child so that child doesn't have to turn to only you for sorting it all out. Because it can really trigger an existential crisis. And I think, you know, mid to late teens is probably the appropriate time to do that. But imagine hearing at 16 that a half-sibling or a sibling was aborted. I mean, it does trigger an existential crisis. Like, you know, the teen asks, well, why did I get a chance to live?
Yeah.
Right? And so these things are part of the consequences, Bill, that are included when we say things like, you know, you can choose abortion, but you can't choose your consequences. You can't know what it's going to mean down the line if you have children. If you may never, you know, have the chance again to have children. I've heard those very sad stories from people who thought they were going to plan a family and never got pregnant again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, so for millennials, they're very aware. And they're also, I think, you know, they're so better armed than we were, forearmed. They have the internet, right? I had no idea what fetal development looked like until 20 years
sure.
after my abortion. You know, and I could Google it and I could look at the images that show, you know, the humanity of the unborn. I think Oxford University showed a heartbeat can be detected now 16 days after conception, Bill.
Wow.
You know, and so, yeah, the information about abortion, about fetal development has exploded in the last 10 to 15 years with the Human Genome Project, talking about separate DNA between child and mother, and of course, ultrasound technology. Very, very hard to hoodwink millennials with the it's just cells ruse that abortion has been built on for the last 45 years.
Yeah, it doesn't work quite that way anymore. Kim, thank you so much. I love when you come on the show, and you're always such a delight to talk to. So thank you for making time for me today.
I'm glad you care. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Bill.
Kim Cottola has been my guest. You can head over to her website, which is cradlemyheart.org. And you can learn all about Kim and her blogging and writing. As I'm thinking about We the People Day, today is Election Day, so I hope you got out and voted. And if you didn't, if you're going to make time on the way home to vote, that would be a really good idea. And as you get ready to lay your sleepy head on the pillow tonight, just give your attention all to God, believing that He will prepare you for your tomorrow when it comes. And God is faithful. And as you rest and get restored through the night, just know that He is not sleeping. He's keeping an eye out for you. Thanks for listening today. If you missed any of today's show, head over to myfaithradio.com. Go to the Afternoon with Bill Arnold page, and you will find some pretty good interviews. Rob Bluey was my guest, as was Will Graham in the first hour. Will Graham is the grandson of Reverend Billy Graham. And then Bob Lapine from Family Life Today and Kim Cottola has been my guest in hour two. All great interviews you'd love to hear if you missed them. Have a great evening, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.